sending my son, holding him back, has been so the absolute right decision. The difference in emotional maturity, so even just things like his resilience, we've come such a long way in the past 12 months. And that wasn't from us doing anything, working specifically. I just believe that he is so much more confident, which makes me feel that he's so much more ready.
I'm Sarah Kearns and welcome to the podcast. This is a safe space to discuss the topics affecting everyday families. Let's take an inside look into our own realities and the realities of others. We'll learn together as knowledge creates empathy. Empathy shapes the way that we act, and those actions can change our family and those around us. This is the Conscious Project. Early childhood educators are an incredible bunch of people. They dedicate their lives to supporting and nurturing the most little of people. They cuddle our babies when we can't be there, they wipe away their tears, and they teach them the foundations of emotional and academic intelligence. They get to see the side of our child that we don't often get to see. So when it's time to make the decision whether to send our child to big school or to help support them in this transition, your child's early childhood educator should be your first port of call. Tamara is one half of the Brooklyn Way. You met her twin sister Nadine on season one, and she's an early childhood educator. Today she shares an educator's perspective on school readiness and how they make the assessment to whether our child is ready. She's also a mum of a child who starts in kindergarten next year. I sat down with her today to find out what educators consider when they assess school readiness. Hi, Tam, and welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, now your voice is going to sound so familiar because we had your beautiful twin sister on in the first season. That episode is titled The Brooklyn Way. So Brooklyn is your little nephew.
Yes, he is. And yes, we do sound very similar and look very alike as well.
Oh, it's so funny. I feel like I've chatted to you and we've done this before. So before we hit record, you're saying, oh, I'm nervous. And I'm like, no, you've done this before. You're fine.
Yeah.
We're both in our jammies, sitting in our wardrobes, hiding from our hopefully sleeping children. So mum life.
Yes, mine is sleeping and I've pulled everything out of the wardrobe.
Yeah, we just make do with what we've got, right?
Absolutely.
You're a childcare educator, so we would love to know how long you've been doing that for, and we're going to touch on starting big school, which is just like the big topic at the moment for so many parents, particularly with the craziness of the last couple of years and, you know, the uncertainty of moving forward into orientations and even up to that first day of school. So if you just wanted to recap a little bit of like how long you've been in doing childcare, like an education, and why you joined.
Yeah, sure. So I've actually been in early childhood for 15 years. So I was 17. I was doing my last HSE exam and I got the call that I had been accepted for a traineeship. So that last exam didn't go down that well. and I have been doing this ever since. So bit of background, we have younger siblings. Our youngest brother is actually 12 years younger than us. And I feel like that had a lot to do with my career choice. So we had a lot to do with raising him, and I just felt like I wanted to learn more about that early childhood perspective.
Yeah, you're a total natural. It's definitely your calling. And I think, yeah, we've had the absolute privilege of you having two of my boys so far. And I'm sure you'll have Teddy as he gets into that little bit older rooms. And yeah, yes, you're definitely a natural. I love the way that you are with the kids.
You.
Obviously, the big hot topic at preschools and things right now is starting big school and what that looks like and how we know they're ready. And it's just, It's so overwhelming for particularly for a mum that hasn't done it.
Very overwhelming. And I'm now finding that it's getting closer, a very emotional time as well.
Yeah, because your little one's off to kindy.
He is, yes. He's 5 and he's going to big school next year. And I feel like we've gone through the excited phase and he's very excited. But now I'm really hitting that big emotional side for me. Like we're going to be doing uniforms soon. And yeah, it's very overwhelming. It's a different side of it for me.
It is. And I think it's, I know for when Knox obviously started being my eldest, it was the realization that, and I mean, I was fortunate enough to not need them in, you know, any kind of childcare for 5 days. I always had, you know, sort of around that 3-day mark. But I realized that you're really letting them go and you're putting your trust in a teacher that's going to be with them basically more than you are, because when you've got them, they're pretty much asleep. So you're putting your trust in a school and little kids in their class and you're handing them over in, you know, in a really big sense.
Absolutely. And I think we've really seen that this year. So I'm not sure what Finn school is like, but the orientation process has been so different this year due to COVID, and you haven't even been able to take your child in to their first orientation. It was basically kiss and drop.
Which is huge.
It is huge. And that is, yeah, you realize what a big step this next transition is.
Yeah, you're literally putting their little bag off and kissing and dropping them and just sending them off with someone, an adult you don't even know.
That's right, that you've never met before. So with our school, the teachers actually brought each child back to your car. It was very bizarre.
Yeah, it's a lot, and it's just changed the ballpark. So we're in New South Wales, so we're aware that obviously what we talk about may be slightly different in every other state. So for us, kindergarten is that first year of formal schooling in a primary school. We sort of mainly say, you know, early childhood, childcare, preschool is kind of that 5 years and under. And then once they get to that sort of formal schooling in a classroom with a teacher is more of, we refer to it as kindergarten, then year one, year two, and so forwards. I think Melbourne is like prep, and that's pretty much my extent.
Yeah. Queensland's prep, I think.
Yeah, so for everyone listening not in New South Wales, when we say kindergarten, we're talking about your prep, or I think it's foundation somewhere else. I'm actually probably should have looked all those terms up, but I'm sure followers are following along with us anyway. So I guess like from a mum's perspective, I'm doing this second time round now. So I'm really curious on what you as an educator sort of look for to indicate that school readiness. And I know that a lot of people with children, so Finn is 5, he turned 5 in April. So last year I had this decision whether do I hold him back and send him closer to 6 or do I send him now at 4 turning 5? And either option was okay. And obviously every child's going to be so different. But I basically spoke to our educators and I was like, give me all your advice, give me your opinion. So what are you actually looking for when a parent comes to you with that?
So Sarah, can I just say how great it is to hear you say that you went to your educators? My first point is that we always want to collaborate with our families. It is a partnership. We want what is best for your child first and foremost. So to hear that you have said that, yeah, you had that conversation with your educators and you took their feedback on board is absolute music to my ears. So partnership is always really important between families and educators. Absolutely.
Yeah. And because kids are so different at like school, preschool, big school, they are so different to when they're at home with their siblings. Like you may go, well, my child bickers with his siblings and doesn't listen and won't get dressed when I ask him to. And then you speak to their educators and they're like, oh, he's like the best at cleaning up and he's lovely at table rotations and he sits so attentively. And you're like, my kid? No, I'm Finn's mum. No, that can't be my kid. So you really need to, we don't get to witness that. You guys get to see that side of him. So it's so important to take it on board.
Absolutely. But yeah, we look at the whole child. So there is that sort of narrative that reading and writing, knowing your letters and numbers, that equates to being school ready. And there is just so much more that encompasses that prep and transition to school to create, a really positive and confident transition. So we do look at the whole child. We look at their emotional well-being, their social skills, their physical capabilities. We look at factors such as their ability to concentrate and attention, persistence, problem solving. All of these learning dispositions really make up that prep for school.
So what would be some examples of physical? Because I know when I sent Knox off and now with Finn, like I think as a mum you're worried about like, will they be able to get their jumper on when they're cold or take it off? Or are they going to be able to go to the toilet and zip their little zipper up again? Or, you know, things like that. Is there anything that perhaps we may not consider or that we should sort of tick off in our little minds as we're listening to this?
Yeah, so I think things like encouraging your child to carry their bag into school in their final year or even earlier if that's what they choose to do. It's a really independent practice and we know children love to be independent. But they're going to have to carry this heavy bag with a lunchbox and a drink bottle, maybe their jumper, some books and belongings. So it's important to get them used to that. And things like, being able to sit on a group time mat and participate, exactly what you said, being able to undo zips or do buttons up and even being able to hold a pencil, those are the sorts of physical aspects that I'm talking about.
Yeah. Actually, that reminds me when I took – so I had to make this decision for Finn. And ultimately we decided that he would really benefit, although he's my very clever analytical one, we sort of figured he could really do with an extra year of just being a kid and just, you know, having a bit more time with me and having that emotional, little bit more time to, you know, just be little, you know.
Absolutely.
When I was speaking to his will be, you know, principal, he was telling me that the reason they pulled five as a starting school, and I don't know if this is true, but this is what I was told, is that their little bones in their hands don't fuse properly until they're five or around five. So that's where back in the day, apparently, the five came from, why we start them at five.
That's really interesting. I've never heard that before.
There's just so much to think about. Like you said, like you've really got to assess that whole child when you're making these decisions because it's, you know, some kid like Finn that can remember everything about his entire life, knows what sunk the Titanic at what time and how long it took and all these things, was still had that separation anxiety at drop-offs and, you know, really needed that time to be snuggled on the lounge that couple of days a week and really not have to commit to being on and being focused 5 days a week and things like that.
Absolutely. And that definitely comes into it, the fact that, they're going to be moving from, say, some children go to school, preschool, that is, 2 to 3 days a week, and then they're going to go 5 days a week. Mm. And, you know, they're going to have a lot more to think about, I guess, you know.
Pressure and like being focused and active. And then like you begin sports and after school activities. And I know a lot of my friends, you know, start their kids in kindy and all of a sudden sign them up to like 3 or 4 sports. And I'm like, whoa, like that couple of terms with Knox, I did it. We all do. Yeah. You get so excited for them. Yeah. And then like midway term one, I was just like, let's just focus. He was falling asleep on the way home every day. I'm like, let's just focus on school right now, because that's a long time for a little person to be so switched on.
Yes, I've heard from a few different families that that first term towards the end, so say week 8, 9, 10, the tiredness of their children just falling asleep on the way home, and it's just really hit them how, you know, how much
you just struggle straight on the way to the holidays. Yeah. And that comes out with their emotions and their, you know, behavior and all of those things. We tend to be their safe place. So they'll be good all day and come home and just snap or be cranky. I know with boys particularly, I don't know if girls are the same, but my boys are so like if they're hungry, they're just not as nice as they could be. So I would pick Knox up and literally have a lunchbox packed and he would just eat the whole way home and then he would come alive and be so much happier again. But I just started going, okay, when he gets in the car, he just needs to sit, look out the window and eat. He doesn't want to talk. He doesn't want to be questioned. He literally just wants to eat and stare out the window and have some downtime. And then I found that was much better than in those early days. I'd be like, what'd you do? Who'd you play with? Where'd you go? Did you get to lunch? What'd you like? And just ask them a million questions.
That is such a great tip. I love that because my son is constantly ravenous. So I will be doing that. I'll be having a second lunchbox packed for pickup time. I love that.
Yeah, and you'll probably find he won't eat nearly as much as he normally does. So he'll work his way through both lunch boxes. I know we have a 20-minute drive, so it actually worked really well in kindy because it gave him that time to stare out the window, and I would have to like literally turn the music up and like seal my mouth shut because I'm like, don't drill him with questions, even though I was dying to.
And that's a huge difference. It will be between like the preschool that my son attends and big school, because you know you have that really flexible communication between your preschool and yourself. I don't know if it's like that in big school.
Really depends on the school, like and I think like I can only go off my little social group, but I know like a couple of the mums in a local public school really don't have email communication with the teacher, sort of have to call the office and make an appointment to speak on the phone.
Okay.
Where we're really lucky at our, we've got at a very little private school, so we have the teachers that we can email, and that's a godsend because, you know, you could even email her and be like, oh, you know, Knox gets sinus. I can say, oh, he's had a sinus migraine all night, so he didn't get much sleep, but I've sent him. Let me know if he's not coping. Or just sort of they can give you a heads up and say, oh, look, there was a little incident today and I'll give you a call later. Or they can just kind of give you a bit of a heads up, or I've noticed he's not focused as well this week. Is there anything going on? But I do think like talking to kindergarten teachers and other teachers is they really do have the same opinion on wanting that collaboration with parents and families and have those lines of communication, whether you've got to call and make an appointment or you can email and really have this two-way street, particularly if your child has additional needs or, you know, specific things that you want them to know. It's so important to let them know because they've literally got them more than you do now. You know, they need to know as much as they can.
Yes, absolutely.
So we talked about the physical and the emotional sort of what like things that you assess really. What if, you know, they can't write their name very clearly yet, or they're not sort of getting those ones that their numbers or their letters or things? Are you sort of concerned about that, or would, you know, say to a parent to hold them back?
Truly, no. No, I think we really need to work on changing that narrative, and there's so many more important things, and those things will come. You know, I believe that emotional well-being is way more important, and building and empowering confident children, I would definitely talk to a family about that and maybe set a goal as, you know, part of their learning journey. But I would we do all of that anyway through play.
Yeah.
So there's always opportunities for literacy and numeracy throughout every aspect of our environment at a preschool. There are things called transition statements or transition to school statements. You could maybe mention that in there, but I don't think that would make or break me saying to a parent, your child is not ready for school.
Yeah. And I think the teachers at school know that they've got children coming with such a wide range of knowledge. And, you know, there may be kids coming that have never been to a formal sort of preschool or, you know, early child care at all. So they may be coming in a little bit behind kids that perhaps are going 5 days and have, you know, really had a lot more exposure to it. But once they get there, they just pick it up. It's just wild. I remember like sending Knox and, oh my gosh, he didn't even want to write his name. I remember Christmas cards and in preschool, and he would write a K and then say to me, I'm like, what about the rest of your letters? Like there's just four. And he'd go, oh, mum, it's just too hard. Like they know who it's from. It's a K. No one else starts with a K. They know who it's from. And I was like, he's just so struggled. Like he hates writing. And within a couple of months, they're reading a book to you and it is just mind-blowing.
It really is. And I actually spoke to a parent from my class last year, and I seen her in term one and I asked how her child was going, and she was mind blown that her son was reading. I think it was like a level one reader or something. She just could not believe it.
It's such a ride, and it's like it's so exciting to watch. I'm excited for you've got now you're going to have both sides once your little one starts, and you're going to, you know, it'll be so interesting for you to see it from a mum's perspective as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And also your primary school, they will adapt learning. You know, these teachers are so amazing. They'll adapt learning to your child's needs and their learning style. So,
Yeah, God, education's come, like, they've really switched on to this, you know, ways of learning and their emotional intelligence and things now, I feel like, than when we Absolutely. Were younger. Like, there's more research, there's more understanding, and it's just incredible to see how our teachers have adapted. And gosh, like, with the last couple of years, look how quickly they've adapted and they've managed to teach our kids and keep them. Like, I thought the kids would be so far behind, and they're not. They're just killing it, and that's that these incredible teachers that just keep adapting and they just know our kids so well.
Yeah, teachers are amazing, and we have such a wonderful education system here in Australia.
Yeah, we're really lucky. So I feel like the other trend I'm seeing just from like our sort of social circles and our school, like I said, our school's private, so they have a little bit, they're able to sort of put their own rules and twists on things, I guess. And they've actually moved the cutoff for if your child has to be 5 before March instead of the traditional July here in New South Wales. This may be different around the board as well. But here we have, they've got to be enrolled before they turn 6. And if they're turning 5 before July, they can go. Otherwise, they need to wait for the following year. So if you've got a child like Knox that was born in November, it's super simple. They turn 5 in November and they go the next year. But when you've got a child like Finn, who's an April baby, it makes it really tricky to make that decision. But I've seen the trend at the moment seems to be, and this may just be in our area, but that people are preferring to hold them back and give them that little bit extra time in early childcare and hold them back until they're closer to 6.
Yeah. I think we're recognizing more the emotional maturity of, say, the difference between, a 4-year-old turning 5 or a 5-year-old turning 6 and how important that is. And I just think, did you go to school? Were you 4?
Yeah, because I'm March, so I was 4.
I'm April. So I feel like, in the 90s, a lot of us went to school when we were 4. Now there are a lot of studies that indicate the benefits of sending children to school later in terms of, developmental age appropriateness.
It's definitely a trend, I think, that's picking up. And I think for us, when we were trying to make the decision with Finn, and again, chatting with the school was such a vital thing to do, because our school sat us down and was like, look, he's academically so ready. Emotionally, he'll be fine. Could definitely benefit from another year in early childhood. But the majority of our kids that are enrolled are 6 or very close to being 6. So for us, it made us go, okay, that's a really good point, because he would be 4 for most of all of term 1, he would still be 4. Yeah. And so if he's a 4-year-old attending 6-year-old birthday parties, like that's a big difference.
It is, yeah.
And it's the other end too. So when they're starting high school or they're going into year 12, and I've seen two really big opinions on this, and it's either, for me, I wanted the kids to still be 17 in year 12. I didn't want them to be 18, because I wasn't 18 in year 12 and I saw how the 18-year-olds spent year 12, and that was pretty much at the pub, and I could never go. So it sort of, I hated it at the time, but now I think it benefited me. Where having boys, I'm like, I don't really want them to turn 18 in April and then like be able to go out. So where there are other people going, I don't want them to be 17 in a class of 18-year-olds. So there's really there's no right answer, but it's really interesting, I think.
It is. And we are taking that into consideration more. So I think we're really more privy to the impacts of taking that into consideration. Yeah, not just thinking about their age in kindergarten, but thinking about their age in high school when, say, their peers may be going through hormonal changes earlier than them. And sort of what that does to that teenager's self-confidence and, there's all these different implications, isn't there, and factors to really take on board.
Yeah. So do you have an opinion either way, or it really comes back to that whole look at a child?
In my personal opinion, and I am going to speak from a mum perspective, sending my son holding him back has been the absolute right decision. The difference in emotional maturity, so even just things like his resilience, we've come such a long way in the past 12 months. And that wasn't from us doing anything working specifically, I just believe that he is so much more confident, which makes me feel that he's so much more ready.
Yeah. And I think like birth order and things really come into play here, because I thought, well, with Knox, I would have held him back being the first child if it was an option, no question about it. But with Finn, he was like, I want to go to school. I'm going to do kiss and drop. I'm going to go to the canteen. We'd turn up to school and he'd be like, hey, and call the teachers by name. And I was like, he is so ready. Like, he thinks he runs this place.
Yeah, he's exposed to the environment already.
Exactly. So it's really like, and I'm sure by, oh my gosh, by the time Ted gets there, like, he'll be like, and I'll be dropping him off with his brothers. So it's just, it's such a big, view. So I can imagine it's a really tricky assessment that you do when parents come to you and say, what should I do? It would be a really, really in-depth decision to even make that, give that advice or recommendation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do believe that it comes back to collaborating and just really looking at what's best for that child.
So what does a educator do at home with her own child prepping him for school? Is there anything that is, how many days a week is he going to preschool for one? And what are your little inside things that you do that perhaps we may not know about?
Okay, so at the start of this year, I had enrolled him 4 days. And I would say within maybe term one, I noticed just he was not ready for that. He, by the end of the week, he was so cranky and tired. So I actually dropped him back to 3 days, and that's been the perfect balance. He could probably go another day now, but at the start of the year, it was definitely the wrong decision. Yeah. But what does an educator do at home? Oh, okay. This, I don't know if this is going to be an unpopular one, but we love the, do you have reading eggs? The reading eggs
Yes.
app?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, Ambrose just loves this. And yeah, he's actually learned so much from it. So yeah, we try and really balance out that, you know, iPad screen time with, oh, a bit of learning here on the app as well. So, and he absolutely loves that.
I love the way it teaches them, because it's so like, there's so much sound and there's so much of like them sounding out and like giving them the noise of each sound. And yeah, even Teddy plays it. There's a like even littler version for him, and it's really good exposure. And yeah, and I mean, God, our kids and devices is a whole nother topic, right? But if they're going to be on them, then let's at least get some sneaky learning in there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, other things we do is we love to play family games, and that probably came about from just really trying to build Ambrose's resilience. He wasn't a very great loser at games. So it's sort of become, just part of our family nights. Like, we love to play Snap before dinner, or he loves Uno, and, it's that sort of numeracy aspect of it as well, without even trying, like without even directly trying to teach him these numbers. It's a part of our, it's a part of his learning.
Yeah, I think anything play-based is definitely the key right now. What about with like at home with like lunchboxes and stuff like that? Like, should we be giving them their lunch in a lunchbox or something like that to help with that, those skills? Or I know we just had a lunchbox week at our preschool, which was really awesome.
Yeah, so just back quickly, learning through play is absolutely best. Yes, that there is no need for any structured learning, and I wouldn't do that in my household with my boys either. So lunchbox, I would be taking, we take a lunchbox out every time that we head out, and Ambrose practices opening it. We really encourage him to try and open his packages or, unwrap his sandwich and whatnot. It's definitely something, it's a real novelty as well. So if your kids are interested in doing it, absolutely do it. There's no harm in starting that now.
Yeah. I know when Knox went to school, I was like super concerned with like toileting, going to the canteen, and like clothing was a big one. So at home, I would imagine that you are, really reinforcing and helping your little one practice all those sort of skills.
Yeah, so we really encourage those self-help skills and that that independence. So, you know, when he wakes up in the morning, we encourage him to pick his own clothes and try and dress himself, or he does dress himself now, going to get his own toothbrush and brushing his teeth and just using the toilet himself, but also the hygiene practices, so washing his hands.
Oh, God, I feel like our kids are going to be the generation of hand washers. Like, even Teddy's like sanitizer when we get to the preschool.
And he's in such an animated voice too.
I know. Such a rat bag, that kid. Oh, my gosh. Away for school. They're going to be like, oh, I have these two lovely boys. And then the third one comes along and all the teachers are going to be like, are you sure it's related to those two? A rat bag. Obviously, the only other real thing is that, you know, orientations and transition days and stuff have just looked so different this year. And I am so relieved I didn't send Finn to school, you know, at the start of this year, because hopefully, gosh, my God, touch wood, we have managed to avoid him having to do kindergarten by home learning. And my heart home just learning. Goes out to all the kindergarten parents this year that did it. I'm lucky we did year one and year two, but kindergarten is just, that would have just been so difficult for those little ones and for their poor parents. So, yeah, what are you guys at, you know, in early childhood that's sort of trying to do to help the kids, since that they've missed all their transitions and their orientations aren't really happening?
Yeah, so we're talking a lot about having these conversations about big school and incorporating the children's voices into that. So what questions do they have? How do they feel about going to school? What are they excited about? What are they nervous about? But we also do social stories. So I'm not sure if you've heard of that. It's a fairly simple template that anyone can make up on Word. And it would say, have a photo of the school. And it would say, like, my name is, let's just use Finn as an example. Yeah. And I'm going to this school. And then you would go through it. And it would be a bit like individualized to what his day is going to look like. So not necessarily his learning, but who might be the person that drops him off, or say he's going to catch the bus to school, or is this child going to be attending OOSH, and just really familiarizing children with their routine that way, because there aren't a lot of visits, and there are going to be so many new things that they're going to have to think about. So, whether they're catching a bus, going to OOSH, even having a photo in there of a crossing and a lollipop lady, and having conversations, you know, exploring different scenarios. Say, what if mummy isn't in the kiss and drop line? What could you do? Those sorts of important conversations, I think, just to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's such a great way for parents to implement at home. Like, those learning stories are such a brilliant idea, because they can literally sit down and draw little pictures and do that with their own children at home. And that's just such a great way to get into big school.
Yeah, and it's really easy to do. So have you also heard of the Share Our Space initiative? It's in New South Wales. I'm not sure if it's in other states, but it's basically the Department of Education have participating schools. They open up during the school holidays so that you can use their grounds. So that could be the ovals and the playgrounds. But I just think it is such a fantastic initiative to be able to, have our little pre-kinders go and have a look around their schools.
Yeah.
So if you're in New South Wales, definitely have a look and see if your local school is a part of it.
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. I mean, we know things are calming down as we make this. I know Finn's got one orientation in December, but school tours and things are starting to come back on. So if you're worried about your child not being, you know, that he's going to struggle to adapt or really needs a chance to go and have a look around the school, make sure you are, you know, speaking with your teachers and speaking with the heads of school and things, because they will bend over backwards within the rules to try and help you out. And don't feel like you're bothering them by calling. That's literally what they're there to do, and they won't mind.
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
I know a lot of people wrote in and was like, am I going to be harassing them and bothering them if I'm trying to, you know, have that communication? And I'm absolutely sure that most teachers, you know, all teachers would be so happy that you are doing that and that are trying to support them while they support your child.
Absolutely. That's what they want. Yes. They want you to feel, yeah, they want that partnership with you.
Yeah. So I guess you have a bit of an inside view into our kids that we don't get to really see. So I'd love to finish by asking you, what are the kids saying? When you just said that, you know, we're asking the kids what they're worried about or what problems that they think they may have or what they're excited about. Is there anything that you can think of?
Canteen oh, is the excited one, of course. Monkey bars. Ooh. The monkey bars are another big one that kids are excited about. I think that something that children are worried about that we've have been having discussions about is just how much they're going to miss mum and dad. Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, they are privy to the fact that they're going to this big school and they're going to be going more days. Mm. And, yeah, that's just something that I've heard a little bit.
Yeah, that's a lot. Particularly I think if they're the first and they're not, like I know for Finn, he's worried about that, but I can sort of use them. But Knox will be there and then he's like, oh, yeah, and I get to play with Knox and all of Knox's friends. So, but if they're the first to go off, it's like, oh, you got, I'm sending you out there on your own, and it is daunting for both parents and kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I'm just really glad that many areas are starting to open up and have been able to offer that orientation. I think we all would have found it really hard if our little kiddos were going in not having an idea of what they were walking into.
Yeah.
And now we can look at, you know, we can look at the environment as, yeah, look at all of these exciting things. There's a library and you get to take your library bag and you get to buy things from the canteen. Like, it's such a exciting concept.
Yeah.
But to be able to visualize that, I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. So I think if parents can take anything from this podcast, it's really all comes down to communication. Communication with your child, with back and forwards, with your educators. Just it's just such a collaboration, and there's so many people that get a child through the schooling and that help them grow, I guess.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
It's a little bit sad, but also lovely. Yeah. Dropping them off. Also
it's,
lovely.
Yeah. It's just this very bizarre feeling, like I'm excited but so emotional as well.
I was surprised on how quickly that calmed for me. Like the first couple of weeks I was like, this is just never going to be weird, and then all of a sudden it was just such a natural part of our life.
Yeah.
Like it's just
yeah.
And yep. School holidays, like 2 weeks is great, the 6 week one, by week three he's like dying to go back. Like he misses his friends, he's just climbing off the walls, his poor brothers are not able to keep up with him all day, and he's just running rings around them, and I'm like, oh my god, you need to be back at school. Like they just need it so much. So they just love it so much, and they just get so much out of it, and things happen and they have bad days and hard days and hard moments, but overall it's pretty incredible to watch them grow.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's a ride. Thank you so much for chatting with me tonight.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And for everyone that doesn't know, Tam and her twin sister own and run the Brooklyn Way, which you guys have seen all over my Instagram, but I'll pop her handle in our show notes here so you can find her. They are absolutely incredible. Her beautiful sister is such a huge advocate for her little boy who has additional needs and different ways that she can help support him. And she's created, the twins as a whole have created these amazing emotional regulation cards with your husband was the artist, wasn't he? So it's totally family affair. And if you've got a child that is that a little bit emotional, I know I've got them for Finny and needs that, you know, that real beautiful support. I mean, all kids would benefit from them, but some of our kids are just such sensitive, emotional little beings, and just got the most amazing resources. So make sure you check them out because you guys are doing beautiful things.
Oh, thank you very much. I've only just come on board recently, but it's been, Nadine is just incredible. She teaches me so much, and as does Brooklyn. And it's been a really lovely journey. And, you know, as twins, you sort of always dream of this happening, and we've made it a reality. So it's been very exciting.
It's pretty special. So particularly you new school mums and dads, jump over there and have a look, because I bet you'll find beautiful little props and, yeah, those emotional regulation resources that could really, really help.
Thanks so much, Sarah.
Thanks, Tam.
Thanks for tuning in today. I would love to continue the conversation with you over on Instagram at The Conscious Project Podcast. Hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. And I would be so grateful if you would take a moment to leave me a 5-star review. It really does help. Take care.